So I want to welcome you to Scanners. If you haven't been here before, it's a temporary bookstore that I put together with my partner Nick Hoff, that's devoted to the book as a physical object. And tonight we have two visual artists who are going to talk about their source material. Excuse me. And before we start that, I want to say thanks to some people who have helped us along the way with this project. The San Francisco Arts Commission and Mina Dresden, whose gallery this is, if you had never been here. Margaret Tedesco, Charlene Tan, who helped us build some of the racks. Maya Ip and Courtney Johnson, who have helped us do the register. Andrew and Chris Hoff and John Baruso, who have helped us with numerous graphic design and installation problems. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce the two speakers. This is Brenda Glazier. She's a visual artist and writer, originally from James Creek, Pennsylvania, in Sheffield, UK. She currently lives and works in San Francisco, where she has recently received the Dennis Patrick Gallagher Award for Excellence in Sculpture. Her work has been exhibited nationally and internationally. And this is David King. He's an artist, photographer, and designer of the ubiquitous countercultural icon known as the Crass Symbol. His work has been published by the Museum of Modern Art, New York, Penguin Books, Psychology Today, and Details Magazine, amongst others. In August, he showed his large cell phone photos at Gallery 66 in San Francisco and produced the companion book, Photos the Phone Made. So since this is more of a visual talk, we're going to turn off the lights, I guess, or turn down the lights.
Turn them down, sure.
So they can
down.
Still read.
Yeah.
So
one of the things I really like about Scanners is that it's a vast, complex artwork, more than just an average bookstore. And it's that way because Matt and Nick have, I would say, curated every single book in here. They've picked up every book and they've looked at it and they said, like, should this be in the show? I mean, and it's like an exhibit, and it resides in an art gallery. And the fact that it's a bit of a mirage and that you see it for a month and then it's gone, it would be just a memory. And there are amazing juxtapositions of books. They're placed, you know, I mean, there are sections that are cohesive, but on the tables, and normally, you know, there wouldn't be the chairs, so there'd be three or four tables here. And so books will be placed like one next to another with space around it. And as you glance across the table, your brain, I think, does like weird things, you know, it connects these, makes these, mine does anyway, I should say, but, it, you know, it connects like the McDonald's manual, which is nothing succeeds like success, with a book on the beginner's guide to shamanism, which is a very slim volume, and I'm a little worried because if you were to buy that book and you get to the end of the book and, you know, I think you need the following volumes, but it's only like a 12-page book. But you know, it's, I think it's kind of irresponsible, actually, of Nick and Matt to do that. But, and then there's another book I found here that's called Paper, the Fifth Wonder, and this is published in Wisconsin. And I'll just briefly read an excerpt. With the possible exception of the monocle, there is no accessory which will give a man that English look more definitely than a pipe. Englishmen are addicted to pipes. This, of course, explains why 125,000 million, I think that's probably a number for that, but million matches are consumed annually in Britain. Sam Jones, the London vendor who dubbed them Lucifers, had imagination. In his day, matches were merely fire sticks tipped with brimstone and dipped in, to ignite the earliest types, it was necessary to dip them into a bottle containing a wad of asbestos soaked in oil of vitriol. So, and why is this in a book on paper? Eventually it gets to the point that brimstone is another word for sulfur, and sulfite is used in making paper pulp. So there are these sort of weird random things that can occur, and if you've looked at any book in here as you've walked around, like these, I believe these strange connections are leaping from synapse to synapse, and you may never be the same again. But to quote the Borg from Star Trek, resistance is futile. So that's the great thing about paper. Brenda and I are both addicted to paper in the sense that we collect like just scraps of paper, things torn out of magazines, something we found in the street, gum wrappers, just, you know, crap, basically. But sort of lurid and wonderful stuff, as you'll see in Brenda's influences. So I'm going to hand over to Brenda, and she'll do her portion of the evening, and then I'll come back.
I'm glad you said junk, because...
I said crap,
as
actually.
Crap. Because as a fellow collector and bibliophile, I grew up in a house that actually wasn't mine. I rented it from someone. Well, my parents rented it from someone that made us keep it the way it was. And there was this thing called the junk room. And I perpetually would go into this room and find and uncover things, you know, between the mattresses and the bookshelves and whatever it was. And it has continued in my own life to be something really important. And the images that I'm about to show, whether they be album covers or magazine covers or even just a piece of fashion or a family photo, they explain how I see the world and in a sense also explain how I have come to see the world. So, beginning with album covers. This is actually a really good album. Surprisingly, Cole is the best song on this album. And I think that there's a connectivity that starts to happen between a lot of things. And for me, something that's really important has always been the pyramid, because my parents are scientists, but they worked at a university, and they always made me get involved in this stupid pyramid thing. And I'd be on the top, because I was like the only kid growing up with adults. And so that would be, you know, the guy on the top. Would be me. But what did you say these guys were? The Metropolitan Police?
Metropolitan Police motorcyclists.
Which I think is really great, that police officers are so, you know, jivey.
So did your parents have a pyramid that would sharpen razor blades? You know, it used to be, there was this whole thing about pyramid power, where if you put your razor blades in the pyramid, they would sharpen your old razor blades.
They didn't do it. They just, like, if you fell off of it, you were a hoser. I don't really know, like, whatever that is. I think it's Canadian, but they adapted. Yeah. And this is, we actually both were talking about this album, because it's from quite a long time ago, but at the same time, the text seems to be something that's happening a lot now. And for me, there's only, on this album that I have, there's only a couple songs, but they're very sorrowful and great. And then just talking to, you know, my personal aesthetic, of course, and the perversion of Alice in Wonderland, I've always enjoyed. On skates.
On ice.
Yeah. And these are basically just things that I've collected. Each one of these is something that I've collected either for free, has been given to me, or I bought for very, very cheap. And I meant to mention that earlier, but... Cucumber Castle? What the fuck?
Can you go back to the previous one?
Which one?
That one before. I particularly like this because the tree stump is made of cement.
It is, yeah.
As far as I can tell, like those railings. And it's like that sort of rustic... Yeah, yeah.
That we love here.
Yeah. Yeah, the taller the hand, the closer to God.
And I like how Monty Python this album is.
But serious. As serious as a cucumber.
Yes. And this album actually is really good. I listened to it. Oh, yes. I'm sorry. And these actually have a series of... Obviously beginning with Herb Alpert. And maybe you should say that you said that he was your number one person you would be.
Oh, well, I was asked in college if I couldn't be myself who I'd want to be. And I said Herb Alpert. And I've regretted that ever since. But at the time, I believed his persona. You know, that he was like this cool guy, and he had the Mexican suits with the lights on it, and he could play, you know, the trumpet, and he could take it with him wherever he went. He was a free man. He had, like, lots of girlfriends covered in whipped cream. And I just thought it was great. But then I found out that A&M is Alpert, and I forget the other guy's name. And he was just like a big record executive who had this sort of side gig as a band leader. So... I don't know. I wish I could have chosen somebody else now, but that was my first choice.
Anyway, I also found
this one.
No, bro. And I think this guy actually looks like the person that works at Pacino by my house, which I was surprised by. And this is actually from the 80s, 90s, but it's a really great electronic experimental band, but...
It took me a while to see the baby. Yeah, the organ playing hamster. And this is just off the scale. Not to mention that one. Okay, now we're into a different...
And now, out of all the things that I'm showing, this is one that... Some of the images that I'm showing I actually don't have. But I have an archive of about... probably 200 images of Hari Kiri. And it's a French magazine that's been banned. And essentially, I feel like it's a really great title because they are socially committing suicide by the way that they go about this magazine. And it took me about 3 years to actually get my hands on my first copy. But I wanted to show you several of the album cover, or I mean of the magazine covers, just because I think they're brilliant and just and have a lot to do with the way that I, you know, appreciate society in a humorous way. Terrifying, I'm sorry.
The red balloon.
But there's a sweetness in it. I mean, you know, you have to wait for the next issue if you get to. She licks her tears, basically. And then these are some of the images from within. And basically, this is how to hitch a ride.
What year are these?
It's from 60s to 70s, but mostly, I mean, it cuts off towards the 70s era because they got banned, unfortunately, but. And then this is actually a magazine. I have one of them with me. I didn't bring the Hari Kiri because they're so precious to me, but I wanted people to be able to see something that's happening now that sort of illustrates some of the same kind of imagery. And I think that it's kind of interesting to see artist magazines, and it's something that I also collect. And this is something that Margaret Tedesco actually gave me. And it's, every image inside is brilliant. And then just a couple of covers. That one's really sweet. The healer. It's very sensitive. And this is my favorite book of all time, showing the, you know, retaping jobs. But basically it's in... The narrator is a albino hunchback midget, and her mother and father own this circus, and basically the mother takes as many drugs as she possibly can to make special children, and basically it just the entire book begins from there and goes on to so many kind of cultish absurdities and also interesting avenues. And these are just some more books. Appreciate. This is the first book I was ever given by a boyfriend. It's actually really funny. That was one of my childhood books. Still have it. And this is a Hitchcock mystery cover that I've always really enjoyed those. Epic of Man. And this is actually whenever I've had this book since I was little, but I rebought it at Goodwill because this is like the first time I've ever been turned on by a book. It's totally sexy. My mom actually felt nauseous when she saw this cover, but I don't know if that happens to other people. And then I'd like to go on to my appreciation for movie posters and how they kind of, it seems like something that would be an exterior and kind of blanket thing, but really there's a darker and deeper meaning in what they show. Deeper, not darker. I really like this one because it says, "Yesterday we were decent people killing their they were decent people killing their environment. Now they are savages killing to keep themselves alive," which is, you know, pretty prominent in these days.
Today the pond, tomorrow the world.
And now on to fashion. I'd like everyone to look at the crotch of the belly button jewelry. I think this is kind of Snuggy Bjorn or something. I don't know.
This is my favorite piece. I want one of these for going to get beer. And if you look closely, you can see like the big toe and the little toes at the bottom.
This is Hans Hermert's work. I actually, a lot of this stuff I get for free from work, and I actually ended up getting It's Not a Toy, and these are some of the images from that.
What is Not a Toy?
That's the book title, actually. Uh-huh. It seems like a weird title, but it's basically fashion that's sort of obscure slash on the skirts of sort of Lee Bowery kind of. This is actually from a different book, but I really enjoy Eyelash. And now kind of moving more towards my own work and the way that I appreciate the connectivity between animals and humans, or even animal and animal, and sort of pests and people, or...
Could you go back to the sea lion?
Sure.
So we were talking about this earlier, and Brenda said this seemed very domestic. Like the guy was saying, like, "Oh, come on, just swim backwards and forwards a couple of times." And his partner is saying, "No, I don't feel like it. I'm just going to sit here."
They do seem as if they're a couple.
Yeah. So, thank you. And that's one of the sweet... I mean, that's, to me, is sort of better than dogs with cats. like parrots with mice or whatever that is. And that he has his wing, like, you know, right around it. It's adorable. It's like, everything's going to be okay.
And he's like, "Yay, I look so glad you're here."
Yeah. So what if you can't fly?
Me neither. I got clipped. Oh. And that's a liger, actually. I thought it was a lion, too, but my boyfriend Joe actually told me that
really,
it was a liger.
Is there such a thing? The cross between
And they're a lot bigger, apparently. But anyway.
Here we are at the beach.
I thought it was incredibly romantic to have, you know, take your baby to the beach in this sort of scenario. And then this always sort of reminded me of my own mom. Even though I didn't have any sisters, I feel like if I did, we'd be doing this thing through the woods. And I've always been obsessed with The Blob, and this sort of emulates the Mom and Sean's version. The idea of a mother being just as big as her baby is also really interesting to me.
So this we both find horrifying. Because, you know, I was scared by balloon animals at an early age. And they never, you know, and they have to tell you what they're making. Like, I'm making you a swan. And it's like, that looks nothing like a swan. And what is that like?
Well, it's like a number two.
It's a number two. And what is that? What is that, a rabbit or a balloon? Or several, anyway. It's very troubling to me.
So I go to the flea market a lot, and I found a box full of photos, and this woman's mother was a nudist who apparently was really involved in her life, but I never saw any images of her, even though there's like about 75 photos of them, of this particular person. But she was risque enough and kind of weird enough that she ended up having a morphed kid. And then this is my mom, who also had a morphed kid, my brother. But anyway, she wasn't really that risque, I hope. And then these are just a couple of images that I directly put into my own artwork. And then this is a wall of my studio that I just added to a collage I did. Another. And then that's basically the King Kong photo that you saw. But I changed it in a way that neither person or neither figure seemed more important, because I wanted it to be more of a Tinkerbell / Peter Pan experience where they both were as powerful as one another. And then here's the hamburger bed. He's with his dog. And here's a couple of sculptures that I've done. There's a close-up. And then I wanted to end with this, because it seems like she's looking.
Wondering what?
What just happened? Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, so the first thing I'd like to show you is I call it studio visit, so it's just a few slides of things you would see if you came to my studio, and it's just a couple of minutes, and I'm basically going to show it without comment. So these are, you know, scraps of paper, comics, you know, just stuff lying around in the studio, objects, stills from movies, sculptures, graphics. Do a lot of stuff with stencils, cartoons, sculptures. That's a relaxing robot. You don't see that very often. These are Ukrainian film posters. All the best from France. I like this one because it's an oil company chief executive from Sinclair with the Brontosaurus. Duck. Best issue ever. To Dave, all the best. That's Dion, who's in the audience. That's Dion also. I make a bunch of books, iBooks, from photographs that I take and find. Bruce Wayne is drinking milk in that picture. Okay, so the next one, a lot of artists have pin boards, and I have one, Brenda has one. I've also collected things that might be pinned up into scrapbooks, and I pasted them in such a way that they make kind of like multi-dimensional chess in my mind, like just by making a book out of it. And so it's layered in sort of throughout the whole book, and it's you can kind of make up your own narrative. This is about a 3-minute piece. Okay, thank you. So this next piece is about the store, about Scanners, and I came in a couple of times and photographed books that caught my eye, and these are again, it's a kind of three-dimensional collage, and anyone could come in and make like a completely different version of the store, and this just represents a little cross section. And let's just play this. So you could walk away with any of these books for the most part, except the ones maybe pinned to the wall. But I like that the history is trapper and a businessman and astronaut in the last one. He's Canadian. I bought that one, so this is Slovenia. So many books. There's the beginner's guide to shamanism I was mentioning. Okay, so that's that ends with the McDonald's manual. So I'm going to read just a couple of brief extracts. This is if you want to start your own McDonald's franchise, this will tell you how to do it. I think this actually should have for your eyes only. I mean, I'm surprised that we can actually see this because it's very revealing of what happens behind the scenes. But this I found in this very store.
What year is it?
I don't think it's dated. There's an introduction title page from the president, Ray A. Kroc, and you Kroc. You may remember the title of his biography was called "Grinding It Out," So here's a little bit about meat, food specifications. McDonald's use a hamburger patty 10 to the pound. A meat purveyor must have a Holly-matic or other automatic pattying device in order to handle McDonald's volume. The Holly-matic plate used is the 10-S with 3-5/8 of an inch diameter and 1/4 an inch thick. Fat content should never be less than 16%, nor any greater than 20%. 18% will give you the best McDonald's hamburger. The meat should basically be a cow chuck hamburger. Other ingredients may include flanks, rounds, trimmings from Prime and Choice, and steer plates. There should be no hearts, lungs, fillers, dyes, or preservatives. Buns. The bun is commonly called a 4-inch bun. The bottom diameter is actually 3 3/4. The bun should be baked in an Echo pan number 7524, sandwich roll Dondex bottom or approved equal. The bun is an individual bake, not a cluster bun, and is sliced clear through, not hinged. Very important. Baked weight should be 21 ounces per dozen. And then just a brief note on cheeseburgers. Cheeseburgers are a real plus item with extra profit. However, they should be made properly so as to increase the sale of this particular item. There is a tendency for employees to hand back hamburgers to have a slice of cheese put on when they happen to be out of cheeseburgers. This does not produce the best quality product and is not permitted. The best trained employees will only permit a cheeseburger to be made in the orthodox manner. when the buns are hot, just after coming off the griddle, and the meat is very hot, the cheese melts just enough to get warm and creamy without disintegrating. We know our slice of cheese is thin and is purposely cut thin to fit into the operation from a production standpoint. Again, secret document. The other thing I like to do is I have quite a few film stills that I've collected over the time. I watched this a serial that was from the 40s that was about 13 episodes of 20 minutes long, and it would show, you know, every Saturday morning for kids. And I went through it, and I shot about 400, 500 frames, and I made a book out of it. And then I decided for this evening to sort of reanimate the stills into something that approximated the movie, but in a kind of stop motion format. And so all those hours condense now to about 2 minutes, and I'll just play this again without comment. Feedback. If anyone has any comments or questions, we could probably turn up the house lights.
For both of you, it went by pretty quick. There was so much rich material that those flashes on the screen, I wanted to see each of those images for a lot longer.
Uh-huh.
And I know that you kind of... it was just, like, I want to read everything, I want to examine your sketch, but your sketchbook was beautiful, but the juxtaposition, but each one, I wanted to look at each one of those pictures even more, so thank you for it. It was such a flash, though. The film is magnificent.
Oh, thank you.
The
bass line when we mixed it was just perfect, but it wasn't supposed to be quite that intrusive. But, yeah. Anyway. Yeah.
What were they doing in that film?
Well, so okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so when I went through the whole film, I took out all the principal characters. So it's only the henchmen. And because it's a serial and they're like 13 episodes, it's naturally repetitive. But all these frames are, they're not duplicated at all. Like, if you were to see it again, you would notice, like, four men go down the hatch, and three men go down the hatch, and two men go down the hatch. And throughout the course of the sort of 7 hours, they have to keep moving hideouts. So they have like maybe five different hideouts. There's the Harbor Club. There's a room in the Hotel Alexandria. They have the old hacienda where you see the guys going through the curtain, and so delicately, like with the back of their hands, you know, like going through. And so you never see the evil mastermind, but they're going to visit him every time, and in order to get to his secret hideout, they have to first go move the tumbleweed, move the shrubs, go down they go underground. There's a rock wall that their leader can see through, So and to make sure that he, you know, it's really his men, he lets them into the next section. Then they go down that trapdoor and they get in a submarine, and then they go to where his secret headquarters is, and they come out and they go and finally into his like laboratory, and he can turn himself invisible, and which is why at the end you see this gun and a rope. He's actually hanging on the rope holding the gun, but you can't see him.
Is he going to rule the world?
Yes, he's trying to. He's you know, every episode he gets, you know, something goes wrong. They can't get the you know, the heat ray overheats, you know. It's always something, but and eventually he's defeated. But and I saw an episode of this when I was about 10. And it's sort of stuck with me ever since. And a couple of years ago, I was thrilled to find that you could actually, you know, get a copy of it. And then I sort of obsessively went to work, you know, shooting a frame at a time. If anyone wants to see, I made a little book out of that before I made the movie. So, yeah. So. I did it off a computer monitor, but yes, I just I set a tripod up in front and just paused each frame and then shot it and then composited it, you know. I mean, fairly simple technique, but time consuming. Yeah. It's kind of strange in there.
Yeah, it's strange.
What's your both of your flea market habits? Or do you go there with certain images in mind, or are you open to whatever comes your way? Or,
well, personally, I begin doing that where I wanted to find a certain thing, and then I realized that was, you know, to my own dismay. And so instead I just decided to try and find by uncovering and sort of searching without intent. And then it actually ended up being something more meaningful than something that I tried to find. Or at least, you know, I didn't realize it at the time, but inevitably it was.
I don't know, I just you know, have my eye in the gutter all the time, basically. You never know what you find underfoot. I also have a virtual museum called the Museum of Small Things, which are little tiny plastic objects. You probably saw them briefly in the studio visit section. You know, so those would cost me 25 cents or sometimes you would literally find something on the sidewalk, but I found images like in the middle of the street, just like that had been torn from a magazine, that had been run over by cars, you know, so they're all sort of dimpled, and so I rush out, you know, rush back like a piece of paper with this fantastic image on it. I must risk my life. So it's sort of from you know, and tearing stuff out of newspapers and. So all this stuff doesn't really cost very much money. The only problem now is that with the advent of eBay, you know, you look at something and it's like, oh, there's a Ukrainian film poster from 1935 and it's $25. I think I really would like that, you know. So it's a temptation now. But for the most of the stuff in the scrapbooks was pretty much found and cost nothing at all. You know. I try not to do that because then it becomes too specific, I think. There are several volumes of the scrapbook by now, and the first one was really made, and I think it's the one you saw, I think it's one of the most successful, and it was really made from stuff that just sort of floated into my view.
And I think I've also noticed that it becomes less specific, actually, because you cue in a word and somehow it comes up with, you know, porno shots where you're trying to look up something else. And I think that it's really nice to find things naturally rather than trying to find them through the internet. I mean,
yeah, the one thing I sort of discovered eBay kind of late, and I realized that it had a sort of dream aspect in that if you were just sort of sitting down thinking, oh, I remember when I was 10, I had this sort of comic book and I really loved it. And so you like type it in and there it is. It's like your memory is like made manifest, and depending how much it is, you might decide to, you know, repurchase your memory. So it's a weird thing, and in fact, with the Somnambulist, the film, I had seen one episode, as I mentioned, when I was about 10, and I had a very clear image of a guy sitting in the back of the car, and he turns, it's the villain, he turns invisible and opens the door and leaves the car, and I saw it very clearly in my mind. That it was shot from the right side of the car, and he got out of the left door. And then when I finally saw the real film just recently, it was reversed. I had seen the camera positioned, you know, from one side, but it was in fact from the other. So that was a strange effect. But, yeah.
Do you ever
yes. Well, I used to go to my grandmother's, I don't know what you call it. She lived in a block of flats and where they kept all the garbage bins, where people, you know, before people recycled, there would be piles of magazines down there. So I would go, and then very often there would be multiples of the same thing. So like in the scrapbook, you sometimes see like, you know, the same image twice, which just sort of hints at the, you know, the mass production of images. So I guess that's about it. Thank you very much for coming. Thank you. And keep looking around this wonderful artwork.